I'm Chaplain Jacob Scott of the Oregon National Guard. This is the Hope in the Trenches podcast. We're going forward. I'll sit down for conversations with people who offer interesting and informative perspectives on finding strength for life and work in the trenches, and even improving our spiritual posture. Whether you feel like you're under heavy bombardment or ready to go over the top toward a new objective, it's good to be with you. Well, Sergeant Thompson, welcome to Hope in the Trenches.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, you've got a unique story, but I kind of want to start with a little bit of the origin story, because that, I think, brings a whole bunch of the threads together. So how did you grow up?
I grew up in Portland, Oregon, Vancouver, Washington, kind of metro area. Okay. Both my parents have been full-time at the Guard base here in Portland my whole life. They moved there from active duty to the Portland Guard base and in 94. Mm-hmm. And so ever since I was born, they've been there. So I kind of grew up on base a little bit. I played competitive sports, but I always kind of knew I'd join the military. Mm-hmm. And so when I was 17 and knew that it was an opportunity for me, I signed up for the Guard and got involved in the fire department right away. Started drilling while I was still in high school, which was really cool. And then, right after I graduated, went off to basic training and came back and then went to fire school and came back and started as a firefighter on base. And that was awesome.
I want to pull on a couple of those threads. Did you hit any resistance from your parents when you said you wanted to join at 17?
My dad was hoping that I would go to college for volleyball, but I just kind of knew I wanted to join the military, and they were really, really supportive. My mom was in CE, so she was especially happy that I was joining the fire department.
Okay, that's civil engineering, right?
Yes, for, civil engineering for group, yep. Yes. Yep. And so she would be actually a part of my chain of command, which, looking back on, it's a blessing and a curse. But yeah, it was great to have my mom in the unit and to kind of already have a little know of everyone, too, mm-hmm. since I had grown up on base, basically. So it was really exciting to just join and have their support.
So you'd been around that culture and grown up as part of it. Now, there's one of the unique things about the National Guard here in Oregon is there aren't any active duty installations. So having parents who are in the military, you already felt like that was unique with your classmates at school?
Definitely felt unique, especially because I feel like a lot of people don't even know that there's bases in general in Portland. Mm-hmm. I mean, the jets fly over all the time, but people don't associate that with a military base being here. So it was kind of a cool secret. Mm-hmm. It definitely is neat to have my parents come pick me up from school and they're in uniform and everyone's like, wait a minute, your parents are military? And I'm like, yeah, it's really neat. And it kind of takes the pressure off. I think Guard feels a little less intense. And so to go on base and be familiar with it didn't feel scary at all. And it was just kind of a little easier and everyone's a little more lighthearted on base. Yeah.
Well, and I've seen that a lot too. People who come off of active duty and go into a full-time position at one of the bases or even in the Army Guard into one of those full-time positions and they love it and they stay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Everyone. Yeah. My parents, they've been there. Yeah. 30 years. My mom left a couple of years ago and my dad's still serving and will retire. He wants to retire in a few years, but they always say that. But he's been on base forever and loves it. And the people there, it makes it hard to leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've been to a lot of retirement ceremonies over the last few years and across the board, what people say is that it's the people that keep them in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's, I don't know if I can say this, but I always feel like it's kind of like a cult in some way of being like you're there for the people and the community and it's so great. And I'm like, I can leave whenever I want. And I'm like, but I don't want to leave.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's a little bit of freedom when you know that you're at a, you've already fulfilled your contract and you're at a place where you could leave.
Right.
But yeah, all the best things about the, about cults, the sense of belonging.
Yes.
And yeah, no, there's, that connection to the people around us is super important.
Oh yeah. The community is unmatched. And mm-hmm. especially I found that really deeply with the fire department too. It's, everyone really looks out for you and mm-hmm. They'll show up for you in all of the ways that you didn't expect them to. And you just kind of fall into this little second family. And so it's really, really cool.
Did you want to be a firefighter?
I think I always did. Yeah. I wanted a job that would challenge me mentally and physically. Mm-hmm. And fire definitely does that. I've always gravitated towards medicine. And so I thought I'd fall into something that was more nursing focused or medicine focused. And I realized that the fire department is the bread and butter is medical calls. And so I get to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel really calm in emergencies and chaos. And so mm-hmm. to show up during a emergency, a medical one especially, it just was really rewarding to me and exciting. So I knew I wanted to be a part of that.
Oh, yeah. I've tried to encourage my daughter to do the same thing. But to be the non-anxious presence in a time of crisis is really powerful.
It is. And they'll feed off of that. And so mm-hmm. if you know that you can show up in that way, I knew I was like, this feels right to me. And I dove headfirst. Yeah.
Well, so now, what are some of the differences maybe of being a firefighter in the Air Force mm-hmm. versus the civilian world?
That's kind of the cool thing. Really, nothing is different. Fire is fire, no matter where you go. Mm-hmm. So all of my certs, everything that I get through my military training transfers over seamlessly to the civilian side. Granted, if you get on with the fire department, they'll typically still send you to schools, which is just a standard. But with the military, I get additional training that civilian side doesn't necessarily, which is really cool. My rescue tech, hazmat tech, all of these advanced courses that civilian firefighters want, you can get through the military and they'll send you to school and they want you to go. And so that's really cool. Then we also get what's called ARF training, which is the aircraft rescue firefighting training.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's another coveted piece that civilian firefighters don't get. Mm. Yeah, I like to say all the time that I'm more certified but not as qualified as some of the civilian guys
because sure.
they get it in and out every single day, and I get the training for it, which is really awesome, though.
But that brings up another question. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people in the National Guard, they want to do something that's completely different from what they do in the civilian world, in their civilian occupations. So is it the same way with the firefighters in the Air Guard, or is there a lot of overlap?
I'm kind of an anomaly because the fire department in the Air Guard is probably built up of 90% civilian firefighters, which is amazing because it makes our training so good. Because mm-hmm. we have firefighters all across the Portland Metro that get to train with us. And it just makes it that much more advanced. And it's kind of funny because we'll go to active duty bases to backfill their fire departments. And they're like, oh, the guard's coming. But then all these firefighters are big hotshot firefighters on the civilian side. So they get to actually train the active duty people, which is kind of funny.
Yeah,
we're
like,
how the tables have turned. But
yeah,
it's really awesome. You get such a cool, diverse group. And then the networking of it all kind of just deepens that connection mm-hmm. to the fire service, and we get to kind of merge all together, and it's really cool.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. But then full-time with the National Guard, you do something completely different.
I do something completely different, and they like to give me, they throw shade at me for it all the time, but it's been amazing. Yeah, I work with the command support staff in the maintenance group squadron, and so I work with, four of the commanders, a group commander, and about 9 chiefs in the maintenance group. I love it.
Oh, that's good. Because I was going to ask then, you've been in the Guard 11 years.
11, yeah.
And has it turned out the way you hoped it would or thought it would?
Totally different than what I had expected in kind of the best way. I didn't think that I would land here working with command support, or that I would stay in for 11 years, but it's kind of one of those things. Every time my reenlistment would come up, I'm like, I can't imagine doing anything else. Yeah. I can be here full time, or I can have my civilian career, but the military has always been there for me and the people have always been there for me. And I'm like, it's easy to complain about all of the early wake ups and the long nights and whatever, but that's what brings us all together. So I'm like, I don't want to give
shared
that up.
Suffering.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
The bonding of it all.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to give that up. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's easy for me to see, cause I've been in almost as long as your dad. So I can relate. Yeah. I can relate to that too. Now what does it mean to have served alongside your parents, and you have a brother who's in EOD as well?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's been really cool. Oftentimes when I feel like I'm struggling or falling, I think about how they've been in this similar situation. They've been the same rank at me at some point. They've had these same similar woes and have come through it. And so that part's nice. Having my mom be a part of my chain of command was, a blessing and a curse. There was times where it was really helpful, and there was times where it was hindering. And so I wouldn't recommend that portion of it. But it's really cool. And I think that's also the beauty of the Guard. There's a lot of siblings a part of the Guard, a lot of family involved in the Guard. And it's kind of nice. And having my dad be in the maintenance group, this is the first time that I've gotten to work, not alongside him, but in the same building. Mm-hmm. We sit in the same production meeting every day. And so that's always kind of funny. And we're polar opposites. He's very Air Force blue, and I'm not as blue. And so it's kind of cool to see the dualness of it.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I challenge him, but he challenges me back, so it's good.
But I think I read one article that was written about some of your recent competitions. Your father was was he a power lifter?
He was a bodybuilder too.
He was a bodybuilder too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He competed in bodybuilding when he was stationed in Alaska. And so he understands a bit of the grind to it and a bit of the discipline and dedication and kind of what it means, because you work so hard in the gym, but it's what you're doing the other 80% of the day. And so he understands that and the just challenge of it. So it's really nice. And the balance. And he was a dad at that point too. So he also really understood that it's like you only have so much to give. And so to dedicate, every little sliver of that time to your goals is important too. So,
oh yeah,
it's cool.
Well, I want to ask about that too. That other 80% and as well balance. I want to ask about that too. But do you remember when your dad was competing? And because I'm a parent too, and so I think about that. What example am I showing my daughter? Right? When does she see me working out or training, working toward goals, things like that?
I wasn't born when he was competing, but growing up, he was really involved in any of the sports, and he's nearly a pro golfer. Like, that's what he's known for. But I think the biggest thing was to keep the standards always really, really high. Mm-hmm. I have this funny memory. I was in fifth grade, and my teacher was getting rid of this pet fish for whatever reason. And I decided to take it home one day, and I brought it home in a mug. And it's kind of silly, but I bring this fish home in a mug, and my dad, of course, gets really mad at me because he's like, "You just brought a fish. Like, we didn't sign up for this." But then that night, he's like, "Okay, if you're going to do it, we're going to do it really, really well." Mm-hmm. So he went to the store and got the best fish tank, the best kind of fish food. He instantly researched what this fish needs, the type of water pH. And so we took it to the best level that we could based off of what we were given. And that's just kind of translated to everything that I do or want to do. And same with him. So it's holding this high standard to whatever it is that you're going to do. You're going to do it really, really well.
Yeah.
And so it weirdly makes me remember this fish story.
Well, yeah, but that's a great lesson. That if it's something that's worth doing or whatever, whatever we're spending our time in, right? Because how we spend our time shows what's important to us.
Absolutely.
And so if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. Yeah, no, I think that's a great lesson.
Yeah. And so he always challenged me in that way. And same with volleyball. And anything I was doing. And so, yeah, he wasn't bodybuilding then, but he was keeping that same mentality through throughout everything that we were doing.
Sure. Well, so then how did you get into bodybuilding?
Yeah, I was, my daughter had been about 6 months old or so, and I started to, I wanted to focus back in on myself. And I was like, I need to be the best version of me to be the best mom I can be to her. Mm-hmm. And so I started running and prioritizing myself and doing things every day that would challenge me to be a better version of me. And the more I started to do that, it led into just kind of now I was getting involved into nutrition, and I was like, well, I want to take this up a notch. I was like, I need to start like having a goal. I was like, I'm going to run a marathon. And then I was like, okay, I need to get stronger. So I started going to the gym, and my brother is a powerlifter, and he also trains for strongman competitions,
okay,
which is really cool. He's like, I think you'd like my gym. It's a little bit more like hardcore. It's everyone there is there with a training mentality. They're not just exercising. They've got a program and a plan. I was like, all right. And so I go there and I start weight training, and I'm like, you know what? I think I really like this. Like, I like weight training more than I like running. And the challenge there is a little bit more. So I just kind of dove into that and felt like I was doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I need a coach. Like, I need to take this serious. And
okay,
got a coach, and my coach immediately was like, I think you can compete. Like, I think you've got the shape for it, the discipline and the drive to put you through a prep and compete. And I was like, hey, I'm all in, I'll do it. And so just sent it. And the first show, I just wanted to have no pressure. And but I also wanted to give it absolutely everything I could. And so we just went all the way in and was able to win my first show. And that was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, so it sounds like when you started running, you, you saw the benefits of physical fitness in other areas of your life.
Yeah. It translates to everything, really. Mm-hmm. The more I would put myself forward and do the things that I didn't necessarily want to do, it started translating into all these other aspects of my life. And I actually loved running specifically for my long runs, because you, your body won't quit, but mentally you start to get bored, and mentally that challenge starts to happen. And you have to practice that really positive self-talk. And you have the most of that when you're running, personally, for me. And so I really loved the opportunity to challenge myself and know that I can push further, run a little further, go a little bit more, and keep that promise to myself to be like, I'm going to run 10 miles today and then do it. And know that at 7 miles, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm done. My feet are heavy. The wind is cold. I'm running against the wind. But then to keep going and then do it and then feel really proud of yourself. It's like, well, now I'm going to do all these other things I don't feel like doing either, because like, I know I can and then I will. And I'm like, oh, it's a crazy concept, but it just rings so true.
Well, and that's, and that's another great lesson. I mean, just this morning I was only ran a few miles, but I had a chance to bail a couple miles into it. And, but to talk yourself into staying and sticking with it.
Yeah.
That, and that's, you're right. That translates into other areas of your life. And they say, whether it's running or weightlifting or, or any type of, I mean, physical fitness, just sometimes the hardest step is the first step out the door.
Yeah, just getting there. The practice of getting myself to the gym, or the practice of getting myself to go on a run, it was the hardest part, because the running part's easy. Like, you can do that.
Yeah.
But it's, getting there, mentally staying there, and the consistency. Because, like, you can have a really good couple of days, but then it falls off, and then it comes back. And so staying consistent was another big changer for me.
And are you the type of person that has to circle a date on the calendar, like a competition? Does that drive you?
Like, or having a goal?
Yeah.
I love having a goal. I love, and the challenge of it, it keeps me accountable. If I feel like I'm just floating, the opportunity for me to want to quit creeps a little faster. Mm-hmm. So I do like having a goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you started to touch on some of that other 80%, and your coach mm-hmm. recognized the drive to be able to go through a prep cycle, right?
Yeah.
What does that look like?
So a prep cycle is really brutal. It's you're tracking everything about your day. So you're weighing all of your food. Your coach will give you either a meal plan or a macro plan. And you have to hit those exact same macros. You do it by weighing your food, how much water intake. You track your sleep. You track your steps. You track your mood, how you're feeling, your lifts, how much weight you're pulling, how many sets, how many reps. Everything is data. Hmm. My heart rate, my resting heart rate, my heart rate variability. Everything is data. And so then I thankfully give that all to my coach, and then he decides what I'm doing with that.
Adjust your training plans.
Adjust the macros or cardio. And so all my expenditure. But I think the hardest part is just as food gets lower, cardio gets higher, managing the fatigue and kind of the mental clarity piece and your motivation to train and show up and consistency has to stay really high, and that gets tough in prep. So I end up leaning a lot on the people around me, focusing in on that goal. So having that circle on that date of being like, I'm 3 weeks out, I don't have time to be like, woe is me today. I need to tick all of the boxes, do all the things I promised myself I was going to do, and then sleep. Do it again tomorrow.
And you mentioned that accountability too, mm-hmm. right? So you've got a coach who's helping to hold you accountable.
Yeah, and I'm really thankful. I've got a really good coach. He focuses on natural athletes, and I really like the space he holds for that. Mm-hmm. Checks in with me every single day, just based on how I'm feeling and my cardio, recognizes how hard it is. He's done several shows as well.
Okay.
And so he understands the demand it calls for. We just keep pushing and ticking every box every day.
Okay. So you divide it up really into bite-sized chunks. Take one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. One day at a time. In the beginning, it's not so bad. Your food's kind of high. Your cardio's pretty low. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of get a baseline, and then you want to slowly start to pull back that. So that way you're in a caloric deficit and you start losing and pulling all of the body fat off to be able to show the physique that you've built underneath. Mm-hmm. And so I keep reminding myself of that, where I'm like, you know, this is part of it, and embracing that suck of like, I don't feel that great right now. This isn't sustainable. I don't like this. My mood is affected. But then to just keep pushing and know that
you keep the end in mind.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it'll come back around. I'm not going to remember how much cardio I was doing. I'm not going to remember that I was so hungry this day for French toast and couldn't eat it. I won't remember that. Yeah. But I will remember how proud I am to be on stage and to get the win when I thought I couldn't, or to just show up on stage and know that I went through that really difficult prep. That's what I will remember. The cardio I'll complain about, but I'll be fine.
I'm not familiar with that, with bodybuilding competitions. Mm-hmm. So you said you're in the natural
yes.
competition, which makes sense because we're in the military, so we,
yes.
we have to keep everything above board.
That's right.
But what exactly does that mean?
So it means I don't have anything. I can't take anything that will enhance. So no obvious things of no anabolic steroids or anything of that mm-hmm. nature. But then also there's a lot of things that are over the counter that I can't take either. So certain
okay.
things in pre-workouts, certain like fat burners and things like that I can't take. And they actually polygraph you for the show. Yeah. So on Thursday I'll have a polygraph because you can't take it within 10 years to be considered a natural athlete.
10 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So if you had taken anything in your past, mm-hmm. it has to be 10 years until you can compete again on the natural side. They also do like UAs and things like that on show day and even off show day if you get your pro card.
Okay. Yes. That's the urinalysis again.
Yes. And so they'll do that, which I actually really appreciate because there's doing a prep is extremely hard. And as a natural athlete, the only thing that I have and the biggest battle aside from like being low on food, high on cardio is my recovery is so difficult. And so we're just managing fatigue. And my biggest weapon is how much I can sleep. And so that's super important. And assisted athletes, they can recover so much faster. And it's easy. I don't want to say it's easier, but it's easier.
Okay. So natural supplements like creatine, can you take?
Yeah, I can take
dietary,
creatine.
Like a lot of the dietary supplements and things
I take
like
creatine.
That.
But it's just macros, making sure that I've got a really good balance of proteins, carbs, and fats. My weapons are tuna, cod, chicken, and rice and oatmeal.
Lean proteins.
Lean proteins. I do have...
And simple carbs.
Carbs. My meal plan is very boring, but it's... I keep it exciting with all my meals I enjoy, and so that's important to me. I'm not going to waste an opportunity to eat something that I don't absolutely love. Since my food is so low, I'm like, no, I guarantee I love eating this. And so the seasonings are cool, and I have to cook everything at home. And so it makes it a little easier to find things that I do like. Yeah.
So what are your favorites and your least favorite parts of a prep cycle?
Favorite part is probably the last couple of weeks. But that's also, oddly enough, that's the hardest part. You're the lowest on food, and you're craving so many different things. But it's my favorite part because you can really start to see all the work that's paid off, and every single day your physique looks slightly better and slightly different. And so you're kind of chasing these new lines that you're seeing every morning, and it kind of makes it feel all worth it. And also, weirdly enough, you have no room for error. There's no wiggle room. Your cardio is so high. Your food is so low. You have to be in this, like, all locked in mindset. And I kind of love that piece of it.
The focus.
Yes. I am so that it's all consuming the last couple of weeks. And it's kind of like this really exciting time. I'm checking in with my coach every day. My life is fully surrounded by bodybuilding and the support is just pouring in. So it feels really cool. And I love that. And it's kind of buzzy. And you know, you're almost done. So the light is like, you can see it when you're 18 weeks out, you don't look like you're bodybuilding. So it's like, it's not as exciting. And you've got so long until you can eat French toast. But right now I'm like 4 weeks away from French toast. So I'm like, that's exciting.
How long is that prep cycle?
Usually for women, it's a little bit longer. Women is about 20 to 30 weeks is a prep. Mine will be a smidge longer if I make it to the Worlds. But that's typically about it. For men, they can do 12 to 16, sometimes 20 weeks, depending on how heavy you got in your off season.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and that it sparked a question too, because I've heard coaches and other influencers talk to people who are just trying to get into weightlifting or just starting a workout program, or they set a goal, they picked a number for what they want to hit on the scale.
Right.
And I've heard coaches say, well, you know, don't weigh yourself every day.
No.
Don't try to track progress from one workout to the next. Give it 100 workouts and see how far you've come.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, or 3 months.
Absolutely. The scale will be your worst, I don't want to say your worst enemy, but the scale is influenced by so many things that isn't just fat.
Oh, yeah.
You eat more carbs, and for every 1 gram of carbs, you hold 0.4 grams of water. So if you ate a ton of carbs yesterday, your water weight's going to spike the next day. And so people who wrap a lot of mental emotion around the scale will step on it and get this like guilt confirmation or feel good about something. And so you can kind of ping pong around, and that's just not the benefit. As well as when you first start lifting or exercising in general, you'll kind of recomposition your body a bit. So you'll start to gain more muscle, lose more fat. So scale weight might not even change, but your physique will. And so your goals will.
Or it might go up if you're gaining muscle.
Yeah. That too. And so it makes it really hard. All of my friends, when I first started my fitness journey, I had lost quite a bit of weight. And they were like, oh, I want to lose 5 pounds. How do I do that? I want to lose. And I'm like, realistically, it's not 5 pounds. But the biggest advice I could give for like not quick weight loss or anything like that, but just to slowly start that ball to start to snowball and get bigger is just walk more, walk more, and then realistically look and track what you're eating and the nutrition side of it. Which I can get lost in the weeds on that. But increasing what's called your NEAT score is going to help bring that down. And your NEAT score is based just off what you're doing day to day throughout the day. So just walking more, hitting 10 to 12,000 steps instantly is going to make a big difference. And people don't realize that until they start doing it. And they're like, that's all I changed. I'm like, crazy. Yeah.
It probably wasn't until I was in my 40s when I realized just how important walking is. And, and as soon as I started tracking my steps about, you know, I think 5-6 years ago, I started to see how, what a difference if I hit 8,000 steps a day, or if I'm consistently below that, you know, then my weight's probably going to start to creep up.
Yeah.
But if I can keep it over 10,000 in that 10 to 12,000 range, it really makes a big difference.
It does. And it's, I like it because it forces you to connect back with yourself in some small way. Cause you're like, well, maybe I can't focus on weighing my food or going to this extreme, but you can like park a little further.
Yeah.
Like get, have a little focus to be like, I just want to increase my steps just in general. And go for a quick walk after you eat every time or 20 minutes. It adds up, and then that consistency and opportunity to choose yourself in these little moments every day starts to translate into other things. And maybe then you'll start looking at like, well, what is in my food and what is it that I'm eating? And do I have time to, you know, hop to the gym really quick? Maybe.
Yeah. And going back to what you said about running too, once you start achieving some of those things, then it can lead to more.
Absolutely. Yeah. The snowball effect is really important.
So I want to go back to when you decided to join the National Guard, and you know, you've talked about how 11 years in, it looks kind of different than you thought it would when you first joined. What might you tell someone who's on the fence about thinking about joining the military or the National Guard in particular, or is there anything that you wish you knew before you joined?
I think what I didn't realize when I joined was just the amount of opportunities that you have within the Guard. I was nervous about not joining active duty that I wouldn't get the opportunity to go travel or go see more of the, even just the United States, but and beyond. But with the Guard, I've gone to Germany and Romania, and I've been all across the U.S. and had these really epic trips. A bunch of the firefighters just got back from Antarctica. They get to go on all of these volunteer opportunities. And I just didn't know that that's something that the Guard could do, even just in the fire department. And then with my job now, still with fire, but with command support, they went to Thailand last year, and they even took command support there with them. So the opportunity to travel is still there. And so that was really cool. And just kind of the dualness of it, I wasn't always full-time in the Guard. I had a civilian career and I went back to college. I was able to do all of these things and maintain my military status. And so I didn't feel like I was giving up my life to be in the military and that the military be my life. It was more that I joined the military and it's a piece of me, but not all of it.
Right, right.
And I love that I get to maintain how much I want to give and how much I want out of it too. So
yeah,
if anyone was on the fence about joining the Guard, it's not that scary. It's you have the opportunity to do what you still want to do, and have the overall support that I've received and the opportunity, like the, not just the people, but all the resources, I should say, that the military gives me.
An opportunity.
And, oh my gosh. If I want to do anything, I feel like I can find a way to do it through the military. And not only will they pay for me to do that, but they'll pay me to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's how cool.
Oh yeah. I mean, right. We get paid to work out, right? In a sense, right? You get paid to train. And I do well with that external discipline, knowing that I have to stay in shape to do this particular job. But it sounds like that's a great endorsement for that citizen airman or citizen soldier identity that we embrace in the Guard. Because I encounter that a lot too. One of my duties is recruiting chaplains. And I encounter a lot of people who think that joining the military means I have to move away from home and I'm not coming back for, you know, maybe years or whatever.
Right.
But to show that, well, you can do both. You can maintain that vocation or that calling you have in your community here in Oregon or wherever you live and serve in the military at the same time.
Absolutely. I knew that I didn't want to leave the Pacific Northwest, but I also really wanted to be a part of the military and follow in my parents' footsteps a bit. And so I got to do that and be in the Guard. And then now I get to be active duty, but here in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the looming piece of, well, I'm going to PCS soon. It's like, no, I belong to the state, which means I'm not leaving Oregon. And that's awesome. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize that.
No. And now you've got some pursuits that are complementary to what you do in uniform too. Because I wanted to ask you about that as well. With weightlifting and bodybuilding, then have you seen? I mean, has that helped you with the annual physical fitness test that you have to take and things like that?
So much so. Yeah, I breeze past the PT test these days, which is awesome. But I think the part that I was most excited for when I started weight training, when I joined the fire department, the firefighters immediately, you should weight train. You should get in the gym. We should do weight training. And this was 11 years ago, and it was kind of the stigma of if women are weight training, they're going to get bulky and big and... First of all, that doesn't happen by accident. Mm-hmm. It for sure does not. I've tried. It doesn't happen accidentally. And so I kind of turned it away and was like, no, I don't want to do that. And I think it was a lot of just I wasn't familiar and it was kind of scary to be in the gym and not know, especially surrounded by firefighters who are very familiar with the gym. So the approachability felt...
Or at least they act like they know what they're doing, right?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Now they come to me, which is hilarious how the tables have turned. But yeah, they had told me, you should do this, it'll help you. And I wrote it off. And then when I started weight training, and then it translated to how I'm able to do the job better as a firefighter and be a better firefighter, I was like, guys, you'll never believe how awesome this is and how great I've been able to do all of this stuff way easier. And they're like, yeah, it's like we told you. But the part that makes me the most happy is how much more they trust me as a firefighter now. They know I'm going to be able to do the work. They know that I can push myself that hard and that I have the muscle to be able to pull whatever I need to, show up how I need to, and then it's just the training piece of making sure I know how to do it. But it's been really good. Definitely shifted.
Oh, no, I think that's fantastic. Well, I mean, because physical fitness is an important part of serving in the military, no matter what your military occupation is. Mm-hmm. And so that translates well, absolutely. Now, there's a lot of research out there, too, on the mental health benefits of regular physical fitness. And I argue, too, and I've found, too, that I think mental health and physical health and spiritual health are all very closely related. And you've talked about making sure you get plenty of sleep, managing your diet and that exercise. Are there any other things that are part of your life now that help you stay mentally or emotionally or spiritually fit or resilient?
I recognize a correlation between if my space is untidy, mm-hmm. then suddenly I'm also scattery and my brain feels scattery. And so I know that I'll show up for myself in the gym, but if I'm not showing up for myself in all these other aspects of my life too, keeping my space clean and having my daughter watch me keep my space clean too. Mm-hmm. So that's shifted and really helped with me. I actually have a couple of babysitters, that come help with my kiddo. And I told them that I was like, if you make your bed every single morning and send me a photo, I'll buy you a new pair of shoes. So every month we do this challenge. And it's not just making your bed, but mm-hmm. it's the act of choosing yourself in that moment for that. It takes less than 30 seconds, even though mm-hmm. it can feel like a daunting task. But if you rip that task off first thing in the morning and you're like, I'm going to choose myself, I'm going to recognize that it's important to have my space feel clean and that I deserve a clean space when I walk into my room. Mm-hmm. It's like a small, I'm choosing me right now this morning, every day thing. And they've been able to keep up with it. And so it's great. Been great. And so I think that's really helped with like my mental health. And if I'm going to choose myself in all of these ways and push to be the best version of myself, it's not just in the gym. It's also going to be in my home, how I'm showing up, mm-hmm. Taking care of myself, you know, getting ready, treating myself the way I would want my best friend to treat me or mm-hmm. vice versa. And so that's really helped. And then it is a lot of, it's mentally daunting to do bodybuilding. It's a very judgmental sport. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of get into this realm of a lot of bodybuilders face like body dysmorphia and sometimes eating disorders kind of go hand in hand with it, mm-hmm. which is a dangerous game and a slippery slope. So I really try when I get into the woes, leaning on my coach, but then also taking a moment to sit with myself every morning and either journal or just sit and just be and drink coffee for a minute and remind myself that I'm like, okay, these are normal feelings. Like I'm going to be okay. And, that's often like when I'll pray or when I'll just be still.
Some meditative practice.
A little bit, bit of just stillness to start my day and to be kind of check in with mm-hmm. myself. If I want to reach to journal, then I can. Or if I want to reach out to my coach, then I can. Or if I just want to like just sit with myself for a minute, especially being mm-hmm. a mom. That's like my calm time before kid wakes up. Yeah. And so I think that's helped with my mental health, physical health, and kind of my spiritual health too a little bit.
It sounds like mindfulness. Are you familiar with that
term?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. It's funny you bring up mindfulness. I recently, the last probably 3 months of this prep, have made sure that anytime I eat a meal, I'm sitting down to be like, I need to sit in this space and take this moment to be very mindful with my food and very intentional with eating and having it as like an opportunity to also just find little pockets of my day mm-hmm. Since it's so filled with everything else to, just sit and be.
Not worry about the next thing that's coming.
Yes. Yeah. And if I'm eating on the go or if I'm standing and eating, then I'm not being very mindful and I'm like, I need to take this time. It's not that. It's really 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like I am in control of that. I can make that happen. So
yeah, and you mentioned making your bed earlier too. I don't know if you mm-hmm. saw that speech by Admiral William McRaven.
Oh no!
You need to watch it. He gave the commencement speech several, 10 years ago now at the University of Texas. Mm-hmm. And he actually wrote a book called Make Your Bed. The simple, what is it? The simple thing that can change your life and maybe even the world, right? Because he makes the point that when you make your bed, whatever else happens throughout your day, when you come home, your bed is made.
Yes. Yeah. I love, and it's, I try a lot of like positive self-talk. Mm-hmm. And so it's like I want to feel good in my space. Like I deserve a calm and welcoming space. Mm-hmm. And I'm in control of that. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm in control of it, then why not do the small thing? And I had one of my the girls that sends me the pictures of their bed being made. I didn't have time this morning. And I was like, okay, tomorrow morning, time how long it actually takes to make your bed.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, it's under 30 seconds. It took me like 19 seconds. Yep, yep. And I was like, you have 19 seconds to and just throw the covers back
up. Send me a screenshot of your screen time. How much time do you spend?
I'm like, it's not that hard. It's not that serious. But it's one of those tasks where you're just like, oh, it doesn't matter. And it's like, no, you matter. And like how you feel matters. And so it translates into these other aspects too.
Yeah.
You're more likely to, you know, there was this other podcast I had heard, and it was talking about the like cold plunges and cold showers and things like that. And it was less about diving into the science of it and more about like, I'm more likely to make the call I don't want to make or do the task I want to do, go to the post office, even though I've been putting it off forever, because I'm doing these things and telling myself like, I'll do the uncomfortable thing for 5 seconds for the gain of knowing that I got it done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you can do that. And so, yeah, even in small ways.
Oh yeah, no, that's an important life lesson too. Mm-hmm. So maybe people might want to know. I mean, do you work out multiple times a day?
Right now, yes, which is kind of cringy. So I've got a lot of cardio, and I like to split that up. Mm-hmm. And so I'll do morning cardio and PM cardio. Then I weight train 5 times a week. And so I've got a training program specific to the division I'm competing in, which is the bikini division. So my coach has my split for me. And so I do weight training 5 times a week. And then cardio is 7 times a week right now, which that's just because I'm at the end of prep.
So there's no like straight rest days, right? There's always... I mean, can you lessen the intensity maybe on some of those days?
Yes. And so we manage fatigue. And so I give him all of my biofeedback, which is my heart rate, my meals, my motivation to train, my sleep, everything. And if those start to slip and my mood starts to get affected, he'll typically recognize that it's like, okay, either I'm due for what's called a refeed, which is a increase in carbs, and more food, and it allows you to just recover a little bit more, wash away that fatigue, or he'll pull back the expenditure. So my steps will get a little lighter. Maybe we'll skip cardio 2 days, or we'll pull cardio in half for a week, just to kind of let my body reduce that inflammation and that intensity, recover fully, and then we get right back to it. And that also allows me to push harder in the gym. So if I'm running on fumes, now my lifts are going to start to be affected. I won't be able to lift as heavy or push as intensely. And so this allows me to bring that back. And you typically will like wash away that fatigue and there'll be a weight drop, which feels interesting to increase food, but then lose weight.
Hmm.
But it's part of the science of bodybuilding.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, some people dread leg day, and of course, I mean, when you're a runner, every day is leg day, right?
That's right.
Do you have a favorite workout or training routine?
Yeah, so with the bikini division, I have legs 3 times a week, which is very brutal. So I love my push upper body days because it feels like a break from my leg day. I would say that's probably my favorite. I feel the like most connected, most excited. And I have a really great workout partner who goes to my gym, and she pushes me on the push days, which is always fun. And to have a gym buddy like that holds you accountable. And also, is there to assist, you know, maybe the last rep that you think that you can't get, she'll get it out of me.
Yeah.
And so I love that. But my leg days are great too. It's just having three of them is,
you can't escape.
No. Loses its novelty a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and you've talked about some of these things too, but any advice that you would give someone who is intimidated to walk into the weight room, or is maybe wants to go to the gym but doesn't know where to start?
Right. The hardest part is getting there.
Mm-hmm.
So just telling yourself, I'm going to get there. And if the first couple of days you get there and you walk on the treadmill, you got there. And you mm-hmm. walked on the treadmill and you got to see the layout of the gym and kind of get a plan for what's going on. Ideally, if I was brand new, I would look at a online training program. It's going to tell you what you do for your push day, your pull day, your leg day. So that way you're not figuring it out and going through the, like someone else has stumbled before you and now they've got a plan. And so you can kind of just follow that plan. And then just keep showing up mm-hmm. and keep doing the things. Find the things that you like and that connect well with you. Ask the questions. I have a lot of women reach out to me and ask, you know, I'm doing this at the gym or I'm eating this. Like, is this okay? Like, this is where my macros are at. And I love that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say like, yeah, just reach out to me. But also, you're totally welcome to reach out to me.
You can start your own podcast.
Yeah, exactly. just showing up is the biggest battle. Mm-hmm. And so doing that and then just starting to fall in love with it for yourself is important. So like maybe you find that you love powerlifting because you are strong and you like chasing new numbers and pushing mm-hmm. heavier weights. And so you start diving into that. Or maybe you like the bodybuilding style training, which is hypertrophy training and training to failure and building muscle and just kind of having the same routine every single time you go to the gym. That'll allow you to build off of that and find excitement in that. The gym, once you start going consistently, really turns into an amazing community
mm-hmm.
and you realize how much the people around you are there for you too. And so, yeah, just accepting that you're going to feel awkward at first, and that's absolutely natural. And then it gets easier every single time.
What about a bad workout? Or have you had to deal with any maybe setbacks like injuries in training or anything like that? How do you handle that stuff?
I've had a few injuries or I'm getting older now. So, I mean, I'd slept on my neck wrong the same way I've been sleeping my whole life. And apparently it was wrong this time. And that
I hate to tell you, but it doesn't get any
doesn't
easier.
It doesn't get better. Yeah, it's awful. I had to buy a special pillow and everything. I'm like, dang, they did warn me about this. And I just didn't take it serious till now.
Yeah. But like they say, choose your hard, right?
That's
it's,
right.
Because working out is hard. And, but so is, you know, inactivity.
Absolutely. And I've noticed now I used to have back pain just on and off throughout before I started lifting or weight training. And now if I have any flare-ups or anything, it's so much less time that it's flared up.
Mm-hmm.
Just with how much activity I have and how much more in tune I am with my own body to recognize where I'm like, oh, this doesn't feel right. I need to take time or I need to stretch more, do this more. Mm-hmm. And so I feel so much more in control of how I'm feeling. Bad workouts are going to happen. I've had days at the gym where I don't really want to go. I get there and the people I'm normally seeing aren't there. The music's trash. My headphones are dead, all of the things. But then I'm leaving the gym and I feel really proud that mm-hmm. I still went. I still mm-hmm. did the thing, did what I needed to do, ticked that box off. And then I'm like, okay, tomorrow is going to be different or better, or I'm going to have my headphones tomorrow. I'm going to make sure I don't feel like this again. It's just, that's life and like mm-hmm. a part of the woes mm-hmm. of it. And sometimes I show up and I'm not happy and it's the people at the gym that bring me back to mm-hmm. it. And then suddenly it's like the best training day I've had. My numbers skyrocket and I'm like, whoa, I had way more in me. than I realized. And that feels really rewarding and it just snaps me out of it. So I remember that a lot with running. I wouldn't want to go and then I'd get done and be like, wow, I feel amazing about this. And I'm really proud of myself. And that was really cool.
Yeah, that's another lesson I learned as I got older was that something is always better than nothing. There's always value in getting out and doing something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and usually like halfway through, you're like, oh, I can finish this. This isn't that bad. Like I made this up in my head for so long and then I'm doing it. And if I'm being honest, I actually kind of enjoy it, but I thought I won it. Yeah.
And I've experienced that running too. You pick an out and back run because then you've got to run home.
Yes. So, yeah. Always.
Well, so maybe to reflect back a little bit on your military career and maybe the bodybuilding journey that you've been on too. Are there any particular mentors that you've had along the way or maybe in the military, any leaders that you've had that taught you something? I mean, well, we've already talked about the influence that your father had on you and some of the lessons that he's shared with you. Any other leaders or mentors along the way?
I've had a few really good fire chiefs throughout the years. I've had a few that are kind of the fire chief I have right now. He's been in... Actually, he came a year after me, so he's been in the Air Guard for 10 years now. And he was always kind of the unspoken leader. Everyone followed him, even though he wasn't technically the fire chief yet.
He didn't have the formal leadership position.
Nope. Yeah. But we would follow him because he just would go through it. You'd be asked to do something, you don't really want to do it, and he would do it anyways. Mm-hmm. And would have the like spunk and fun about it and be like, well, this is what we're doing, so we're going to do it anyways. But he was also expected a lot of you and expected people to hold that standard. And so, and he checks in and, you know, mentions to everyone, you know, how proud he is of a lot of the things that the other firefighters are doing and stays in contact. So that's really cool. And then in terms of like other leaders, I would say my coach in particular, he's just excellent in being able to push me to limits and hold the standard. I don't shy away from him when I'm feeling like I'm not failing, but maybe not showing up the best version of myself. And he'll hold me accountable for that, in a very graceful way. Oftentimes surprising, like I would feel shame or something, and he'd remind me that it's not a shame feeling and that it's a very normal feeling and brings it kind of back to a balance point for me. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, now I can keep going.
Yeah.
And it feels really good.
And that's an important lesson on leadership style, too, because not everybody is led the same way or they... You know, your coach saw the potential that you had and he has figured out how to help you reach that potential and bring that out of you. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like he's, you know, used different tools to help motivate you and encourage you along the way. And that's important, whether that's in whether you're talking about bodybuilding or in the military, too, to understand your people well enough so that you can bring the best out of them and use different tools if you have to help them achieve that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's the holding the standard for themselves, too. I feel like I can relate or trust in the fact that I'm like, somebody else has felt this similar way to me and I'll be okay. I can blindly trust that I'm going to be caught as I'm falling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it feels good.
Oh, that's powerful. That's powerful. So you've mentioned, too, that you also own your own business and do that. You're a firefighter in the Guard. You work full time at the base doing commander support. You're also a parent. And so how have you incorporated your daughter into some of these things that you do? And do you use a word like balance to talk about like a work-life balance? Or how do you manage or fulfill all of those different roles in your life?
Right. I always think back to how I want my daughter to be really proud of me, but I can't expect her to be the best version of herself or to push her to do that mm-hmm. or expect it from her if I'm not doing it as well. So I want her to watch me challenge myself. I incorporate her into as much as I can. Since I'm meal prepping everything, I do have to make her meals separate than mine. And mm-hmm. so we cook together a lot. She's only three. So I've just taught her how to like chop vegetables with like a wooden knife, which is really cute. And bring her along for all of my walks. I've brought her into the gym a few times. Just for her to run around. There's no way I could bring her consistently. Yeah, but yeah. She's a part of why I can push so hard. Mm-hmm. The balance is a feat for my whole family. They help with watching Holland while I'm at the gym or I've got my shows this weekend. And so they're going to be taking care of Holland and bringing that on. Then she'll be able to look back and be proud of what I was able to do as her mom and for her to be able to see me push to those extremes. I hope she's able to take that into her life too mm-hmm. and have those high standards of whatever it is that you're doing to do it all in, mm-hmm. even in the little moments too.
Yeah. Oh, and I think, she absolutely will be proud. I mean, because the way that you have invested yourself in the guard and taken mm-hmm. advantage of those opportunities and then gotten into bodybuilding and the success you've had there, that's incredibly inspiring. And I hope it inspires some of our airmen or soldiers to mm-hmm. to explore different ways that they can be fit,
right.
physically fit and find success in and out of uniform. Mm-hmm. Now, the big idea for the podcast is living and leading with hope. So it's kind of the wrap up question that I like to ask. When we talk about hope, it's this idea that we can expect better things to come in the future. That tomorrow can be better than today, no matter what we face in life. What gives you hope, and what continues to drive you forward?
I would say what's able to help give me hope every single day is knowing that I have more to give when I feel like I don't. Mm-hmm. And in the moments where I really feel like I don't have more to give, suddenly that's when out of nowhere, my family starts to pour into me, or I'm able to lean on my faith and I'm just reminded that I have more and that mm-hmm. I've got the control to change how I'm feeling today and make it better for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I can find these little tiny moments to make my days better. I can make my bed every morning. I can make sure that my space is tidy. I have the control over my environment. Everything else that I don't have control over, I can let go or give up mm-hmm. and surrender to, and then be able to, help change the narrative each time a little bit and snowball it, and then it'll slowly get better. And that gives me quite a bit of hope.
Oh yeah, no, I think that's incredible. Well, by the time this podcast comes out, you'll have had the Washington State Olympic natural bodybuilding competition again, and then maybe even you've got a show coming up in Los Angeles too, which mm-hmm. is a qualifier for the Worlds.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask what's next for you, but anything else that you'd like to share with people listening to this podcast?
I think the big what's next is I'm really crossing my fingers for a pro card. I just think that I want to challenge myself in bodybuilding and see how far I can take it. I'm really, really hoping for the Worlds, and that'll be in Boston. And if anything, I can rest easy this season knowing that I've given everything that I can give and build for the next one and continue with my coach and continue with the gym community and be there for the people that reach out to me and mm-hmm. there for the people who, are advanced in their bodybuilding careers and new to it as well. And just like be a good mom excited. My kid's going to be in soccer and dance, and I'll have time again to go do all of those things and, flex on all the other moms.
Yeah, literally. Well, all the best in those competitions. And, you know, maybe we'll have to have you back on the podcast again. And really, we didn't even talk too much about it, but we should try to get your dad didn't want to be on the show with us today, but maybe maybe we can get your brother to talk about EOD too.
Yeah, EOD would be amazing. And he, would absolutely love that. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, God bless you and your family and the work that you do for the Oregon Guard.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. It's an honor.
This podcast is produced by the Oregon National Guard Public Affairs Office. My prayer for you is that wherever you find yourself, that you might find hope for today and strength for the ambiguity and chaos of life. Blessings on the rest of your day.